I saw the movie about Sid Vicious, and when I saw the movie Spinal Tap, I mean, everybody sat in theaters laughing or sat in theaters going, can you believe this girl? Or can you, that's not real. And I watched those movies. I said, that part of that's my life. For real. You know, people might think nobody could be like that. Nobody could be like Sid and his girlfriend. Those kind of things didn't happen. That kind of stuff in Spinal Tap, that's so hokey, you know. Sorry, but it did and it does, and we lived it.
Difficult time believing, you know, that I'm really sitting here talking to you about it, because the shit that we've been through together in the last 20 years, I mean, you know, you could put a kid through a $500,000 college education.
Hi, I'm Brad Whitford.
And I'm Joey Kramer of Aerosmith, and we are in the studio.
By the end of 1975, Aerosmith had sold 3 million copies of their breakthrough third album, Toys in the Attic. Against all conventional wisdom, their manager had convinced their record company to re-release a song from Aerosmith's very first album, called Dream On, for the third time, even though it had failed twice before. This time, Dream On goes to number 6 on the Billboard charts, a full 5 years after it was first released. It was under this head of steam that Aerosmith's next album, Rocks, was written and recorded for release in May 1976. Aerosmith Rocks was not so much a simple album title as it was a definitive declaration of intent. Greg Prado, an All Music Guide, writes, and I quote, "Few albums have been so appropriately named as Aerosmith's 1976 classic, Rocks." Aerosmith produced a superb follow-up to their masterwork album Toys in the Attic, nearly topping it in the process. For lead singer Steven Tyler, guitarist Joe Perry, bass player Tom Hamilton, drummer Joey Kramer, and guitarist Brad Whitford, it wouldn't be until the entire Aerosmith catalog was remastered on compact disc that they could finally share with the world what Aerosmith and producer Jack Douglas had created with the album Rocks. Here's Aerosmith drummer Joey Kramer, but first, guitarist Brad Whitford in the studio.
Joey and I were like so excited when we got the CD.
Oh yeah.
Because CDs, all of a sudden, there's stuff that was lost, you know.
Back then we used to do records, man. I was never happy with the mix.
You get the digital domain and all of a sudden it's like listening to your roughs. All of a sudden you can, man, I knew I recorded that, but I could never hear it on the record. Yeah. And the disc really brought some great memories back.
Yeah, I'd go from not being able to hear stuff to like all of a sudden there was everything that I played.
That was one of the best sounding records. Rocks, that Jack Douglas was at his peak.
Jones, yeah.
That's the leadoff track to Aerosmith Rocks with Back in the Saddle, written by Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. The pre-production for the album began by bringing the Record Plant mobile recording truck up to Aerosmith's rehearsal hall, The Warehouse, in suburban Boston. Later, recording would move to the Warwick Hotel in New York City, believe it or not. These indulgences were just the beginning of a make-it-and-spend-it period of sex, drugs, and rock and roll that proved to be very costly for all of the members of Aerosmith. Here's drummer Joey Kramer.
Yeah, but we didn't even know, man, that what we were doing was later going to be called hip. We were doing what we were doing because we didn't see any reason not to do it. Yeah, the naivety played its role because we didn't see any reason. That's exactly why we went on to become what we went on to become, because we all, from the day we put this band together, the one common denominator that we all had was that we wanted to be, you know, what we are today. And, you know, I mean,
yeah,
back...
you almost didn't live to be...
But you say, but we didn't know about any of that stuff, man. Right. And there was no reason to let any of that get in our way,
right,
because we just simply didn't know it. So we just, so anytime something came up, we said, hey, why not? And we went for it. And we kept going for it and going for it and going for it. Now, you know, of course, you know, what happened at one point happened, but we are that strong an entity that we went through it. I have a difficult time believing, you know, that I'm really sitting here talking to you about it, because the shit that we've been through together in the last 20 years, I mean, you know, you could put a kid through a $500,000 college education.
Child from Aerosmith Rocks, written by singer Steven Tyler and guitarist Brad Whitford. Along with guitarist Joe Perry, Aerosmith bass player Tom Hamilton is the other New Hampshire native, as solid and dependable as a New England stone fence.
Well, my father was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And
says it all right there, don't it, partner?
Oh, yeah. But he was a dive bomber pilot in World War II in Burma, and way into aviation and, you know, interesting, fascinating machinery, cars and stuff like that. And so I was always inspired by that, by the thought of, you know, my father flying these planes in combat and stuff. And, you know, I think that in that period of time, most people's fathers were doing incredible things, adventurous, dangerous, you know, things. And so I was always inspired by that. And but he was very much, you know, he became a lieutenant colonel at some point because he's probably got a knack for controlling things, you know. And so he was very much into what's reasonable, you know, what, how you should act. So that part of it, even though I resisted it, and, you know, when I was a teenager and, you know, got into a lot of trouble and, you know, did everything to kind of be on the other side of that, you know, some of that is just ingrained. I suppose it's not the greatest personality trait for this business, but it comes in handy, I guess.
And when I mentioned that a band member had described bass player Tom Hamilton to me as, quote, the voice of reason within the band, here's the response it got from Aerosmith's Joey Kramer and Brad Whitford.
Oh, I even know who said that. Did you say that to him?
No.
You don't remember who used to call Tom the voice of reason? We used to call him. Remember the priest, the caricature, the priest that somebody drew. Was it you that drew it?
The righteous Reverend Hamilton.
Stephen dubbed him the righteous Reverend Hamilton, and I think he also dubbed him the voice of reason. We'd all be in a room arguing and shit. Hey, speak, shh, be quiet.
The voice of reason speaks.
And Tom. But I haven't heard that in so long. He was dead serious, but you got to know Steven the way that we know. I mean, like, you know, I go back to high school with Steven, man. I know this guy for, like, over years, you know. So that's the whole thing. The funny part of it is that he was serious.
He's real funny, but voice of reason, you know, Tom still is. He just, like, can put stuff in perspective. Like, you might be sitting there. I can be sitting there trying to spew something out and trying to tell you something, and all you gotta do is look at Tom. Tom, please, and Tom can just put it all together for you.
He can put a description or draw a parallel to something that's exactly what he is. You know, tall and straight and strong and right there all the time. Like, you know, I mean, he's the bass player, man. We're the anchor, you know.
Easy.
Lyrically, the flip side to Toys in the Attic, that's Aerosmith with Rats in the Cellar, whose working title was Tit for Tat, written by Steven Tyler, of course, and Joe Perry, both of whom will join us here in the studio coming up later. Next, Aerosmith guitarist Brad Whitford confesses why Tyler and Perry got the notorious reputation as the Toxic Twins. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with the members of Aerosmith. Aerosmith rocks.
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Brad Whitford of Aerosmith.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Joey Kramer of Aerosmith with Redbeard.
Thanks, guys. Rocks. Ranked at number 175 on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums of all time. It was Steven Tyler who told me, quote, "Back in those days, I wanted to beat up Brad Whitford for being so quiet. And now, Brad comes out a sage." Aerosmith drummer Joey Kramer understands it, too.
There's a couple of things in Brad that I really admire, and one of the things that I've learned from him is how to acquire the ability to listen and how to take things in and not be quite so opinionated about a lot of things all the time, regardless of anybody, what anybody else thinks or whether or not anybody else is even listening to you. Which is a very difficult thing for me to do because of the person that I am. That was like probably one of the most important things, lessons that I wanted to learn, but there really wasn't a way that I knew that I could learn it. By listening and by sitting back a lot of times and being able to keep my mouth shut instead of wanting to, instead of sitting there dying, bursting at the seams to say something or speak, I wouldn't. I see him do the same thing, you know, a lot of times too. But now, now because I've learned that and I've learned more about him, I'm able to tune into it sometimes, and I can tell sometimes when he's feeling the same way, bursting at the seams or wanting to say something but doesn't. And I never thought that he was like that. I just always thought that, oh, Brad, I wish I had that attitude, man, because he just doesn't give a shit about anything. And like, not only was that not the case, but Brad, you know, but Brad, as well as myself, has also changed, as we all have. And so now, instead of being quiet all the time, he's one of these guys that, like, you know, he still doesn't say a whole lot. But now, when he speaks, my ears are real open. And I get a lot of inner strength from him. And I see a lot of, you know, I see, like, the way that he operates. It's fascinating. I think that we all do it now, and we all learn from one another, only because we're open to it. But Brad used to be really quiet, but he's one of those guys, you know, that would talk with his guitar.
Dance on.
Aerosmith rocks. That's a Steven Tyler, Joe Perry song, no doubt inspired by Jimmy Page's funky riffs circa Physical Graffiti, hence the song Get the Lead Out. Aerosmith guitarist Brad Whitford explains why, during this period, Brad appeared aloof or reticent.
About that, I was so quiet in the 70s. I just have to tell people why I was so quiet. I was so amazed at what was going on around me. What was going on? I used to sit in amazement and watch what was going on. It was the characters in this band and the kind of hellish moments and the craziness that went on in the 70s. I literally used to sit and go, wow, what's going on? It was surreal for sure. It was so surreal that I couldn't comment on it. You know, I mean, I really couldn't. I mean, there were so many things. I mean, when I saw the movie about Sid Vicious, and when I saw the movie Spinal Tap, I mean, everybody sat in theaters laughing or sat in theaters going, oh, can you believe this girl? Or can you, that's not real. And I watched those movies and I said, oh, that part of that's my life. For real. You know, people might think nobody could be like that. Nobody could be like Sid and his girlfriend. Those kind of things didn't happen. That kind of stuff in Spinal Tap, that's so hokey. Sorry, but it did and it does. And we lived it. And that's in the 70s, I sat in amazement, unable to. I mean, it was just like, wow, I can't believe this. I mean, I would go. I'd have to be out of the context of the band to talk to people, for the most part, because I was just in amazement all the time.
Yeah.
Aerosmith guitarist Brad Whitford feels compelled never to forget the increasingly dangerous excesses by other band members.
I live with painful memories that I will not, I refuse to forget. A knot in my stomach, that dreadful fear for someone. When I saw Steven collapse on stage, and I knew he was out. I didn't want to believe it, but I saw his foot twitching. Lots of moments like that that I won't ever forget. I don't need to be reminded. But I have real big and horrible memories. Lessons, hard learned lessons. I don't want to forget them. I won't forget them. But for me, they're there. They're real scary. Some really bad times that this band went through with drugs and alcohol. Almost took this band and a whole lot of other things away from me. Dead serious when I think that's the most dangerous stuff out there for, you know, anybody. It's just bad news. I mean, it could take your whole life from you and a lot more.
Still to come, lead singer Steven Tyler of Aerosmith joins us with guitarist Joe Perry, commenting on what made Rocks so special. And Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver guitarist Slash gives his tribute to the Rocks album. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Aerosmith, Rocks.
Hey, this is Joe Perry from Aerosmith. You're in the studio.
Welcome back, in the studio. I'm Brad Whitford of Aerosmith with Redbeard.
Thanks again, gentlemen. Aerosmith lead singer Steven Tyler maintains that one book wasn't enough.
If I was to say one thing, it's about survival. This book is about survival and how we did it and what we got out of it. For every bridge we burnt, we got another hit song. In doing this book with the guys, I can't tell you how many times I sat down and said, man, I'm writing a book. I'm sorry. Enough of this. I'm writing a book. Because there's many aspects of, you know, I really don't want to get into it right now, but there are, you know, there's so many people came out of the woodwork to either try to trip us up or help us along. That's the point, is it's not over. I mean, we started as this band to try to write some songs, and it started with a couple of ditties like Dream On and Moving Out and the very first album. And then, you know, it seems today, although a lot less than before, that the world at large got caught up in the drugs, Aerosmith drugs, this and that, and Aerosmith clean as an arrow and back and sober and all that stuff. I mean, it was nonstop. And it is, if you look at it, about the music. You put the first album on, you put Toys in the Attics on, you put Rocks on, you put Permanent Vacation on, Pump, Get a Grip. It just is nonstop, and no, it's not over. Anybody out there ever heard an album called Rocks?
Aerosmith guitarist Brad Whitford.
Going through life, you have to learn acceptance. You have to learn to accept lots of things. And people are something that you learn to accept. People are it's a wide variety out there. And but believe me, if there was anybody out there who would want to groom you, I suppose it would be Steven. I mean, even perfect strangers, you know. I mean, he'd walk up to a guy in a wheelchair and say, I know you can walk. And believe me, I've seen him do it. I've seen him do it, you know. So it's like, no matter, it's just, that's one of Steven's funniest quirks. He'd go, why do you do it that way? He'd go, man, because that's the way I do it, you know.
Smith live in Orlando in 2004.
Thank you!
Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver guitarist Slash tells how rocks impacted him.
And I was going to school, and there was this girl in the school that was a little bit older. She was at another grade above me. Ooh, and
an older woman.
Yeah, I was really, really had the hots for this girl. Anyway, so I pursued her pretty much the whole semester. And then finally she invited me over to her place one weekend. I guess her mom was out of town or something. And so I went over there and she had all the sort of teenage accoutrements. You know, we had the pot and we had some wine and we had some Southern Comfort. And
all
the
necessities.
Candles and all that. And, you know, like Led Zeppelin, Cream, I remember Pink Floyd, all these records. And in the midst of all, which we put on and sort of talked and made out and whatnot. And then she had this album that I'd heard once at a party, like maybe a month before that, that I just fell in love with. But it was at a party. I didn't have control over the stereo. And there was this Aerosmith record. So I saw it and I put it on.
Which one?
It was Aerosmith Rocks. It was definitely, I heard a song off of it last night. And And it's still to this day, it has a certain thing to it that just speaks to whoever it is that's in me, you know, that just really nails it on the head. I guess it's just that sort of reckless, high energy, sort of pseudo drugged out, you know, devil may care kind of attitude that record had. And just as a teenager, especially, it was like, it was very specific to my personality. Anyway, so I put that record on and then got lost in that record. I must have listened to it, I don't know, over and over again. I don't know how many times. Until finally, you know, because I completely ignored her. Finally, she just told me, I think it's time you should go home now. And I didn't care. You know, I didn't even think about it. I listened to that record backwards and forwards so many times and then jumped on my bike and took off like I'd just gotten laid. It was the same kind of energy that I had going on. And that sort of really sort of got me set in the direction that I ended up going in.
And Aerosmith guitarist Joe Perry thinks that a lot of the magic of Rocks was in the method which they recorded back then.
The greatest strengths of the band, which is our ability to play live, because this is basically a live record. It's a live in the studio record. I mean, it's, like you said, highly produced, but it's a live record. I mean, it's what you would have heard if you were standing in the middle of the room when we recorded them is what you hear on the tape or the CD. You know, it was time for us to make this record. And, you know, it was like, wait a second, we have one of the best live bands going. I mean, we get off so much playing in a band together. Let's get some of that on tape.
Keep falling.
Yeah, buddy, I'm Redbeard, back in the saddle in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking all the guys in Aerosmith. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Production. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.